Hello, listeners, and welcome to A Tale of Two Game Devs, a podcast about two friends who aren't video game industry veterans.
But want to be.
Now, that voice you just heard was that of the man who defies description, Milo.
You cheater. And that other lovely voice is one who knows no more studying, my dear friend, Michaela.
I mean, not until next semester.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, as of this recording... I no longer have any more school to do for the semester, at least. My last day of school was on Tuesday. We're recording it on a Thursday, so 2 days ago. It's currently May 16th. We're recording several days late because we had some busy schedules to work around. But hey, we worked around it, and now here we are.
Yeah, it's almost like playing a game of... Twister, yes.
Yeah. I was going to say cat and mouse. Like,
yes. Who's the cat? Who's the mouse?
The podcast is the mouse.
Okay, so we're both cats.
Yes, but we're fighting each other to get to it, but we need to both get it at the same time to make it work, which is why we're having difficulty finding a time to do it.
Got it. Cat and mouse death match.
Yes, except they only win by both staying alive.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
This is getting really complicated.
Exactly. Imagine like some kind of game where like you only win by like keeping the people you're fighting against alive, but you have like all of the weapons to fight against them.
Yeah.
And like they're going to be like aggressive towards you no matter what.
Yeah, like how do you defeat your opponents when you can't injure them?
Yeah.
in a deathmatch style game.
I know in like Monster Hunter games, there are like one of like the special ways to hunt monsters is by just capturing them, which like usually grants you like different and I think like maybe increased rewards because it can be more difficult to like, it's almost like Pokemon where you get them to like a really low health and then you like lay out a trap for them.
Mm-hmm.
But
you throw your Pokeball on the floor.
Yeah, your monster ball, I guess.
Yes. You have any plans to see the Pokemon movie?
Detective Pikachu. Oh my God. Yeah. Brian was telling me that he wanted to see it right when it came out. And then it turns out he was very, very busy with schoolwork for like that entire like weekend until he left on like early Tuesday morning. So he ended up not being able to see it in that time frame at all. And so I haven't gone to see it yet. I want to see it though. I really do want to see it
because
I've heard it's good and I'm so excited to see like a good video game movie about Pokemon.
Yeah.
Especially since I love Pokemon.
Yeah, absolutely. And they didn't just try to like say, okay, here's the video game story. It's now a movie.
Exactly. I've heard like the most interesting thing about it is like the way that like sort of the world is portrayed. It's just like this city with Pokemon like completely integrated into it and helping people like as a part of the city, as opposed to how it's usually portrayed in the games where they're just, you know, they're cooped up in their balls all the time and then people only bring them out to fight.
Poor things must have such cramped arms and legs.
Exactly. I mean, if you like in the anime, at least it looks like they turn into energy or something. I don't
know.
Yeah. The Pokemon get atomized, maybe. I have no idea.
Science.
Science mon.
Yeah. How's your week been?
My week. Well, I'm a little tired right now. That's why I'm yawning.
Yeah.
I've had an eventful couple days. But it's really my week and a half since we've last talked. But
yes.
I spent a lot of time in this last week and a half working on my animation and planning and games project.
Yeah.
I think I will talk about that in dev thoughts. Just because like, you know, what else would I talk about in dev thoughts? But yeah, like it's mostly been me like wrapping up the school year. I had the day right after the last podcast we did, I had a final project for my design class to present and we got good grades on that and I've got an A in that class overall. So yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Like I said, I spent a lot of time working on that animation and planning project. on Tuesday this week, so 2 days ago, my very last thing I had to do for school was a final in my internet programming class. And like, I did okay on it. I got a B. I think this is going to bring me to in like A minus in the class. So it's not the worst. I'll take it.
Not bad at all. A minus is great. Shush you.
Yeah. I got straight A's last semester. And so like anything else is slightly disappointing at this point. But also I should like, it's maybe good that I'm lowering my expectations again so that I don't feel like I have to maintain straight A's just as like a personal challenge, because I probably shouldn't, because it's a lot of work. But it's like, there's no particular reason for me to, but
right. Because employers don't care.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if your GPA is like above a 3.0, they don't care that much, but
yeah, nope. It's just, eh.
Yeah, exactly.
And in the game development world, at least for chatting with DigiPen students, it's like the employers don't care at all. They just want to see what you built. It's like,
right.
You got two Fs and three Cs, but you made a great game. We don't care. Come join our team.
Yeah. And I think that kind of applies a lot to like software dev writ large, in that like, especially in like software development, there's a lot of sort of like self-made programmers out there, you know, who like taught themselves to program and then got a job, or who like went through like non-traditional educations, like a 6-week like front-end web development boot camp, and then they got jobs from that, things like that.
Yep.
So in this field, or in like basically any field I would be going into, education doesn't matter nearly as much as like skill and experience does. So it's really pointless for me to get super good grades, even though it's almost like a pride thing. But
yeah, absolutely.
But yeah.
Yeah, I totally hear you. I remember when I first got, I think it was a C, and I was in, I got a B in a writing class in my first year of high school. And I was like, what?
Oh no.
My life is shattered.
Like everything you had planned is just completely destroyed now.
Yep.
There's no way you can be the man you thought you would be.
Right. And from that point on, I knew I would drop out of college 3 times.
I mean, that tracks, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh boy. But hey, I mean, you know, life takes you weird places sometimes. We'd all be lying if we knew where it was going to take us, that's for sure.
I'd certainly be lying too. Pikachu would know this very well. I mean, 1 minute Pikachu's there fighting other Pokemon, the next minute he's nothing but pure light and energy.
Exactly. And I'm sure he didn't see that. What's like liquefaction but for energy?
Yeah.
Energification.
Right. It's like there's melting, right? Which is when you go from solid to liquid, but what would it be
from solid to like plasma?
Yeah.
Plasmification.
Yeah.
Plasmosis.
Plasmosis. I like plasmosis. The technical terms behind Pokemon. Plasmosis. Yeah.
Honestly, like, they should hire me to write the incredibly deep Pokemon lore.
Yeah.
I can do that. I'll just come up with all sorts of like technobabble words and just throw them on a page.
Yep.
But yeah, so that's been my my school wrapping up. Also dominating my life quite recently has been the fact that, I think I mentioned this on the recent podcast, that as soon as school was up, I was gonna like come out publicly on like social media as trans to all the people who still know me by my old name and old gender. And so on Wednesday afternoon, I did that. I just put out a Facebook post. Like earlier in the day, I like made sure I like had a good photo of me, or at least one that I felt like was good enough to put on the internet, because I'm very self-conscious. Sure. And I threw together a post because like I felt like by this point I've gotten quite good at expressing my trans feelings, because I've had to do it to so many different people. And I just threw it out there. I was like, okay, make this post. Don't look back. And like literally almost immediately, I was getting people who saw the post were like liking it on Facebook and then like reaching out to me personally to say mm-hmm. that like stuff like, hey, so proud of you. I'm so happy for you. Like even people who I hadn't talked to or even like seen their faces since middle school were like, hey, I know I haven't talked to you in literally forever, but I just want you to know that I'm happy for you. Glad you get to like be true to yourself, etc. Want you to know I'm there for you if you ever need anything, stuff like that. I had a bunch of people who like how were kind of like people who I had like had friendships with at one point or another, but I haven't really talked too much since, like messaging stuff like, hey, so I know it's been a while, would love to catch up or something sometime soon, let me know. And like, as a noted extrovert, I will gladly catch up with every single one of them. But yeah, like I even had like several like female friends, like even female friends who like I don't know very well at all, like reach out and say stuff like, hey, if you want some clothes, I have some clothes I could get rid of. Or if you want like any, like I had this one is deeply ironic. I had my old high school long-term girlfriend reach out to me and like, you know, like say like she was happy for me and everything. And also say that, hey, if you ever want any like makeup or fashion tips, let me know. And like, while those are things that I've been working on myself for a bit, I'm like, hey, I mean, like I would certainly like, I haven't talked to you in like a while. Like, do you want to go clothes shopping or something? Like, I'm going to be back home in Rockford soon. And she's like, oh yeah, sure. And so like now that's going to happen. And so it's really interesting to think that like we've gone from like being like a man and a woman dating to like two girls going out like buying clothes together. But life is wild like that sometimes.
No doubt. Wow. Oh, it must be so lovely to feel all the support of those people.
Yeah, like it was kind of surreal. Like I think as of now there's over like 150 like likes and love reactions on it. Literally everything I've ever seen from anybody like either messaging me personally or commenting on there was positive. And I had probably around a dozen people who like reached out to me personally in addition to like another like 10 to 15 comments on the post itself. Like it's wild to me, like how many people were so incredibly positive and supportive out there. Like, I assume this was just going to be like a decent gossipy thing for some of like my old high school friends and stuff, you know? I mean, like it was just going to be that. And like, there were going to be a couple people like being like, love you and support you on the thing. But there was like, it just feels like a lot. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But in a good way. So, wow. And also there's a small fact that like I literally never have to wear boy clothes again. I'm pumped about that.
Nice. Yep.
somebody else, like another friend of mine who I made in my film class actually this semester, he's a trans man. So like the opposite of me, but he reached out and was like super excited and happy, like, hey, I'm so happy for you. And I was like, yeah, no, we should totally like hang out sometime. Sorry I went the entire semester without telling you. I just get really anxious about stuff like this. And he was like, oh yeah, no, it's fine. And he mentioned like, hey, I have some old dresses from back when I used to be presenting female. They're like, I don't super want to just throw away because they're really pretty. Like, I can like get some of them for you and like you can try them if you want. And so I was pumped. I was like, yeah, absolutely. And so I told him, you know what? Wait, come to think of it, I have like an entire wardrobe of men's clothes that I no longer want. Do you want to check those out? And so like he came over today and basically just like raided my closet and took like a pretty big chunk out of it. I want to see how much of the other clothes I can find like a good home for before I just take them to Goodwill or something. But
yeah.
So it's all fun and exciting right now. Yeah.
Like the clothing exchange.
Yeah, I know I've definitely heard people joke about stuff before, like trans men and trans women should just get together and like exchange everything. Exchange all like the knowledge and clothing and everything that they don't need anymore for the others who do need it now.
Yeah. And lo and behold.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And so, like, that actually happened for me. So that was pretty fun.
Yeah, but, cool.
But yeah.
Now, has the clothing exchange already happened?
I said earlier today he came over.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All of, like, his old, like, women's clothes that he was talking about is at, like, his parents' house in Wisconsin. So, like, he's going to be there over the summer. And he said, like, when he comes back, he'll bring some of that stuff for me. But, yeah. But, like, obviously, like, I don't know, I was presenting mail, like, for this entire school year. So I had all my men's clothes here. So I was just like, yeah, come on over. Like, take whatever you want. I don't want it anymore.
Cool.
But yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's been my last couple days. Also met up with, like, a couple of friends who I hadn't seen in a while. For each of them, like, neither of them had seen me in person since I started, like, you know, presenting female. But, and so that was fun. Had great times, like, had some nice walks outside in the beautiful weather that we're having right now this week. So, yeah. Yay. How's the weather over there in Eugene, right?
Don't do it. Oh, it's too late. Okay,
wait,
so.
Wait, what did I do?
I'm in Bend.
You're in Bend? Oh, yeah. No.
I can never, ever be in one place for too long, as you may have noticed.
Evidently. Yeah, I feel like you've moved so many times, at least since high school.
Yeah. Yep. It was high school. It was in Eugene. Then I went to Chicago. Then I went back to Eugene. Then I went to Minneapolis. Then I went to Eugene. Then I went to Redmond. Then I went to Eugene. Then I went to Bend. There seems to be a bit of a trend here with Eugene.
Right, right. It seems like you always have to, like, go to Eugene to, like, recharge before you go somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. It's my home base.
That's valid.
Actually visiting. I'm visiting my grandparents right now who live in Bend, and it's been really lovely to just get to be in their house, and it's just me and them, and we've been eating food and we've been meditating, and I've gone to church with them a couple of times, and it's been really lovely, very quiet at their house. And Bend is, of course, very beautiful, though it's been a bit overcast and getting some rain, which I'm a fan of, so.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm in Bend, and that's what I'm up to.
What else have you been up to? I'm thoroughly exhausted my segment.
Yes. Yeah. My hands are starting to do better, which is really nice. So
yeah.
For everyone that is just joining us, it was tendonitis / tendinopathy, which is like tendonitis is inflammation of the tendons. Tendinopathy is your tendons are weak and need strengthening, which is essentially...
Okay, was about to ask.
Yes, yeah. So it's nothing new. It's just working through it. So the tendonitis part is actually down. It's like I don't hurt. Like just going about my daily life, I'm not in pain. I still can't use my thumbs extensively, but small wins, I can now pick up very light items by like with my thumb. So I can actually include it in very small movements. I can do zippers sometimes. So that's really nice. My thumb is getting stronger, so I can actually I can actually move my thumb, which is new.
Well, that's good.
So it's coming along. My wrists are super weak. I'm going to need to do some work on them, but I'll bring that up to my physical therapist. One piece at a time.
Yeah. Have your exercises evolved since the last time we talked?
I don't remember what they were last time.
I feel like it was just like picking up fingers with your hands or something. Right. Like yes. Something really light.
Yeah, they've evolved a little bit. I now apply pressure to try and move the joint downwards and have to resist it. So just pushing my thumb and not letting my thumb move.
Gotcha. Okay. So your thumb is getting stronger.
Yeah. My thumb, by the end of this, my thumb will be ripped. It'll have a six pack.
I think that might be like a little bit of a disturbing sight, but you know, if it works, it works.
Yep. It's just my thumb does like 900 sit-ups a day.
I mean, I think those would be like thumb ups. I don't know. Can a thumb ups really sit?
Yeah, it's debatable.
like do a thumbs up at people 900 times in a day.
Right. just say good job every time. Good job. Good job. Good job.
Like at that point, you start to sound like a video game soundbite.
Yeah. Yeah. And a really annoying one at that.
It makes me think of like Wave Racer or something, or like one of those like jet ski games you play in the arcade.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You like do a trick and they're like, good job.
Yeah. 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 Or like those old, when they first had sound or like voice bites in like the Super Nintendo area, and it sounds all like, world done. It's just like kind of crunchy and electronic.
Uh-huh. Oh God. Do you remember, did you ever play Super Metroid?
Yes, but not a lot of it, but yes.
Well, you have to remember the opening, right?
No.
Like, the last Metroid is in captivity. The galaxy is at peace. I love that line. It's so goofy sounding. It's just the voice acting is so... It's an interesting choice.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. Funny.
But like, I feel like in the Super Nintendo era, that had to have felt revolutionary.
Oh,
like,
gosh,
as a kid playing
a
Super Nintendo, like... Oh my God, this is like a real cinematic experience. They're talking. That doesn't happen.
No, but, not at all.
But yeah.
I've also, in the midst of moving, switching topics, going back to what I've been up to, in the midst of moving back to Eugene, I had to reset up my computer station so that I could have access to a computer that was a little more ergonomically friendly. And I did that and booted it up and life was wonderful. Except for the fact that when I turned on my monitor, it just turns on and then there's like colors streaking lines across the screen and there's this huge crack in the top right corner. It's like, oh, well, this didn't survive the move super well, did it?
Yeah, it got broken in transit between Canada and back, right? I think you mentioned this on the last episode.
Ah, got it. I don't remember. Did I mention that I got a new one?
Wait, oh, no, you didn't mention that. I don't think that had happened yet. You were using an entire flat screen TV as your monitor. Yes,
32-inch flat screen TV. It might be a 36-inch. It seems bigger than 32. It's big when you're like
big.
Right up against it. Yeah,
right.
It's big. That's too big for my setup.
I think my ultra wide right now is like 28, and like I feel like it's on the edge of being too big.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Yeah, right. So I did some research and I wanted this time to get it was actually kind of interesting because I'd wanted to get a new monitor that would be a little bit better for gaming type stuff. And so I was considering getting a second monitor that I could then use also for like, here's where all my lines of code go, and then I'll have my nice pretty monitor for doing colors and in games and what have you, which is, it's cool, but it's a little bit cumbersome just to have two monitors and setting that up in a way that works super well for gaming for someone who has never had two monitors before. This is not actually cumbersome in reality if you're used to it.
I don't know. I mean, you're talking to me. I like using one ultra wide monitor so I don't have to deal with two monitors.
Yeah.
I just hate having that sort of like the separation of the screens. Like,
yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah, I hear you. It's got this weird gap going on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like there's like this real world space that's invisible in computer space. And like, especially if the monitors have like different sizes or different resolutions, and like the way one window will scale up and another window is just awkward to me. But so that, long story short, that's why I like having one monitor that's wide enough to effectively have like two monitors worth of real estate and just have like two full-size windows side by side.
Right, so I wanted a monitor that could do both, hopefully. And I was just going to compromise. I don't do a lot of color work in my line of work. So I was going to get a TN panel that had like a 144 hertz, which essentially means for people out there who are normal and don't geek out about this, 144 hertz essentially means that the monitor can display super fast frame rate so that it's just really easy to keep up with what's going on.
Yeah, specifically that like the screen refreshes to the next frame 144 times a second.
Yeah. Super, super quick. Great for gaming, especially at like competitive levels, which I'm not nearly at. But
right. I feel like that's
nice
quicker than you're ever going to need for gaming.
Yes, yes, unless I suddenly get picked up by an esports team, which would be nothing short of a miracle.
Because, like, from what I know, I think we talked about this in my animation class at one point, but, like, from what I know, how many frames a second the human eye can see is somewhat variable based on the person. But, like, even in, like, when you're in your most sort of, like, intense state, most people can't, like, even notice the difference between 120 FPS and, like, well, I mean, most people can't see at 120 FPS, let alone notice the difference. Like, if you were to flash one frame out of 120, most people wouldn't see it. Even if they're, like, fully, you know, intent and paying attention. I think, like, usually their max is somewhere closer to, like, 100 or 110. So 144 is, like, that's overkill.
But, yeah, and man, some of the competitive monitors, they're 240. It's crazy.
Well, like, and see, that's, I feel like that's marketing more than anything else, because I don't think there's anybody who, like, notices a difference between 144 and 240.
Yeah, all I know is that the esports people use it. Beyond that, I don't know much. But yeah, I mean, based on the 120 science study that you're talking about, it seems unlikely.
Yeah, there was this whole, I think actually, now that I'm remembering some YouTube video that talked about this as sort of like, it was a really interesting breakdown of, like, computer monitors and human vision and, like, the various aspects thereof. And, like, kind of the central thesis was, like, why you don't need 4K, but they also happen to make the point of why you don't need 120 FPS, like, on the way there.
But, yeah, yeah.
But anyways.
Yeah. So, like, I'm one of the people that can see a huge difference between 30 and 60, but there are some people that just don't notice. But for me, it's like, it's huge. The difference is massive for me.
And the difference between 30 and 60 is, like, way bigger than the difference between, like, 60 and 120, or even, or especially like 80 or 100 and 120.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you know, because I'll be able to test it.
Oh, well, maybe for you, you know, you might have cyborg eyes.
Right. I really started paying attention to, like, mouse movements and stuff, I adjusted a bunch of my settings in Overwatch to really low. And I noticed a huge difference in the way that my mouse handles, even though it's really subtle. It's just, like, it's quicker. The delay between my movement was shortened. And so it was, like, a very subtle change, but I noticed it. So I'll be curious to see if I notice anything with the one that I'll tell you about when I actually get to telling you which monitor I got.
That doesn't sound like a frame rate thing. That sounds like a response time thing.
Yeah. And so
maybe
that,
both.
That actually leads into the other thing that I was looking at in the monitors would be a super low response time. And a lot of big HD TVs have pretty miserable response times, which is fine. But
it's totally fine for watching, like, movies or something.
Yeah. But for games, honestly, for most people playing games, you're not going to notice it. It doesn't really matter.
Right. And, like, if you're, like, a super competitive gamer, you're probably playing on PC also, so it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Yep. Right. So that was what I was looking for. The TN panels, they sacrifice, like, viewing angles and colors for super fast refresh rates and response times. And so that's what I was looking at. But I also still wanted because I do a lot of editing work for games and what have you on my computer, I also wanted the nice colors. So I got curious and I did some research on IPS displays that have 144 hertz refresh rate and a fast response time. Now, IPS
sounds to me like you're just in the market for, like, the world's best monitor right now.
Yes. Well, I don't compromise. And the longer we do this podcast, the longer you will come to see that.
That's valid. I mean, I don't know. Like, we've been talking about putting, like, special effects and, like, noises and stuff in the podcast for a long time, but we haven't. I don't know. This feels like a compromise to me.
Fair. I don't compromise on certain things.
Okay. Yeah, okay. You're totally valid. Continue with the story.
Yes. And again, just to stop geeking out for a second, or to help those who don't geek out as much on this, an IPS display is going to, I can't tell you about the technology behind it, but it's going to have better viewing angles and better color, essentially, at the expense of oftentimes refresh rate and response time. So the previous monitor I had was an IPS display, and it had, like, a 15-second response delay.
15 millisecond, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. 15 okay. seconds.
Yeah. And 15 milliseconds is, I think that's considerable. Like that's actually quite a lot from what I know.
Yeah. And this monitor wasn't built for gaming, right? It was built for photo work and video editing. So I got it to do game development work. And then I was actually doing development work. I'm like, okay, color isn't this important. I play more games than I work with color. So I'll compromise a little there. But what I came across was a Republic of Gamers, that's an Asus line, an Asus monitor that is an IPS display, 144 hertz with a 4 millisecond response time. So not 1 millisecond like a TN panel, but I get much better colors and viewing angles, which was totally worth it to me.
Yeah, and that sounds like probably about like that sounds like one of the best combos of everything I've ever heard of.
Yes, and that's what the reviews have said as well, is like this is pretty much the ultimate monitor.
What's the resolution on it? Because I geek out about resolution, I feel like, more than anything else.
Yeah. It's 1440p, so it's just ooh, above.
Okay.
Yeah. 2K, I think, is what you can refer to it as.
Okay, but like standard widescreen?
Yes. Yeah, I don't feel any reason to go outside of 16:9, since that's sort of what our world is set up on. Yep, sorry to disappoint.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I like being able to have my two windows side by side. It makes my workflow easier, but
Yep. It's also 27 inch like my previous one was, which is a pretty good size for me. It might be kind of difficult in some cases, but I'll take that hit.
What would make it difficult?
If you sit too close to it, you can't see the entire screen at once. So if you're playing a game, a competitive game, Overwatch, then you might not take in the full picture.
It's valid. You just need to like make sure you don't do like the gamer lean too much. You need to like relax your shoulders a bit.
Yeah, really. But my God, did I pay for it? It's so expensive.
Okay. Do you mind saying what the price tag is? I'm curious.
Yeah, actually. Okay. So I don't recall what the price tag is. I think retail price is $650. So it's hefty. It is a hefty monitor.
It's a thick tag.
Yes, it is. That's that's like entry level 4K for you.
Yeah, except, which is ridiculous because 4K is so expensive. But
yeah, I'm one of the people who doesn't really see a big enough difference in 4K to actually care.
Yeah, I haven't really tried, but I also know the fact that like, given that I am mostly into gaming and like coding, like 4K doesn't make a difference in coding, that's for sure. And for gaming, like it doesn't make a difference unless you have outrageous equipment, which like my graphics card is like the weakest part of my system. So like I don't. But
even if you have outrageous equipment, it doesn't really make a difference because outrageous equipment still can't handle 4K.
I mean, like the most outrageous equipment.
Okay, yes. Absolutely, like hands down, ludicrous equipment can handle 4K.
If you wired up your system with two different GTX 2080 graphics cards running in tandem, 4K, The Witcher 3 4K, go ahead, do whatever you want.
And also give me your computer.
I might steal it.
Yeah, right. That's funny. I was also looking into desks to get because I'm with all of this hand stuff that went on. It's like I am never, ever, ever having poor ergonomics ever again in my life. So I'm doing,
that's so valid.
Yeah. So I've settled on a desk. It's by Mojo Desk, and they do really, really nice standing desks. Unfortunately, so here's the thing. Is I want a desk that rests at about 25 inches so that I can have a fairly low desk where my arms can be bent at a 90-degree angle when I'm typing.
Uh-huh.
But no, all desks are made at like 3 feet. Like, so that means that you sort of have to like hunch your shoulders up a little bit and flare your elbows out in a V if you want to rest your arms on the table, which is just really bad for your body if for extended periods of time and repetitive motions. So my option really was to get a standing desk, which has adjustable height. You can go from like 25 inches all the way up to like 50 inches, right? So it's very variable.
Yeah. So you can like do what you want.
Yeah. But Mojo Desk is very expensive also. Again, this is where I said that I don't compromise on certain things. So like my equipment and design.
That's valid.
Yeah. It's hefty. That one's $1,000. So that's
$1,000 for just the desk.
Yes. Yeah. It's got some stuff on it too. Like it's got a monitor arm and a couple other goodies in there. But yeah, it's hefty, but it's also a really, really high quality desk. And think of it this way. I have spent roughly $3,000 on healthcare bills due to this injury. $1,000 desk to prevent that again in the future. Totally worth it.
Yeah. That seems like, like there's a good chance you would spend more next time. It just, it all adds up. But also, solely out of just dumb curiosity, I've been in the background while you've been talking about the desk, going and trying to like look up price information for the monitor I bought. Because you said yours was $600, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like mine is a high end monitor and it's $300.
Yep. my previous one, the one built for photo editing with super high color accuracy, was also about $300, right? So.
Yeah, yes. This is wild.
I went for a ridiculous one. They also have...
I was going to say, mine is 2560 by 1080, so it's ultra-wide 1080p, so it's not by 1440, I suppose. And there is the fact that the refresh rate is 75 hertz instead of 144. You have roughly double the refresh rate.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think it has IPS anywhere.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is what happens when you get really into Overwatch.
No. Oh, wait a second. It does say IPS. Yeah, it's in the name. Ultra-wide IPS monitor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so, well, I guess I did get that, I guess.
There you go. Yeah, TN panels make me sad. They're really sad to look at.
I'm sorry. So, like, what is the difference exactly between TN and IPS?
I don't know. I know that one has technical limitations. They just, it's like, what do you want? If you want super fresh refresh rates, TN can handle it. If you want nice colors, IPS is the way to go. As for the technology and like what's actually different, I have no idea.
Huh. Well, okay.
I guess we'll have to follow it up in the show notes or in a future episode.
Oh yeah. I can always put that there. But yeah, anyway, I just totally derailed your talk. Did you have more equipment that you bought?
I don't think so. It's really funny. I have two different really high-end mouses, one for gaming and one for everyday computer work, and super nice keyboard and setup. So it's just like, I'm constantly like swimming in technology. This is where all my money goes.
Understood. Yeah. I feel like... I can't say most of my money goes into technology anymore. Most of my money goes into transition related expenses these days. But
a lot of it
does end up going to technology when I feel like I can splurge, which is maybe more often than I should. But I have been eyeing VR headsets for like years, and it has taken so much willpower to like not buy in.
Right.
Especially when there were like the really nice like PSVR bundles. I was like, oh, there's so many good PSVR games. I want to play them all. And they're cheaper now. And I'm like, okay, Michaela, think about this. You are never going to play them. Guaranteed. You don't have enough time to play all these video games that you want to play, that you will totally pay money for. You will buy them and then you will never play them.
Yep.
And I'm just like, okay. Fine.
See, and on the opposite end of the spectrum, I just buy three copies of Overwatch.
Yeah, but you play that. You do play that. When you're not broken, you play that.
Yes. Yes. I played it half a year ago.
Versus like, you always make time for Overwatch, at least, versus me, like, I try to play all sorts of different games. And so I just buy all these games and I have time to play like 1/5 of them, maybe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Man, next semester, I'm taking a custom class about narrative gameplay. I've invented a class with my teacher who focus is narrative design. And we're like, okay, this doesn't exist. Let's invent it.
Oh, that's really cool. So is it just going to be like almost more like a mentor type thing?
Yeah, it's a one-on-one class, and we're going to study a new game every 2 weeks, I believe. And so we're going to look at games that have started to do this, because I've talked about this many times on the podcast. We haven't really figured out how to tell stories in games yet. There's different ways of doing it, but like we haven't found a way to really tie the interactivity into a game, with some exceptions, Undertale, Telltale series, and a couple of games that I'm going to be playing with. And the whole point of this class is to say, okay, here's what exists. Here's how they're telling the story using their mechanics. And then like tests and things will be like one of the ideas that we were kicking around was, okay, so here's the opening level of Halo Reach. Redo this level without any cutscenes.
Oh, or, that's really cool.
Right. Or here's, lay out a concept for a game that retells Moonstruck entirely through its gameplay. And for those of you who don't know, Moonstruck is like a rom-com movie about an Italian family and their drama therein. It's a really, really heartwarming movie, and it's got Nicolas Cage. So if you like Nicolas Cage, go watch that movie.
I don't know like what stage of sort of like solidity you are at for this sort of like class concept yet, but like I'm just curious, like if you were asked to redesign the first level of Halo Reach without cutscenes, like what kind of format would it be expected to be in? How much detail would you be expected to go to?
I have no idea. I think initially my gut reaction is like, okay, I'm going to ironically storyboard, which is what you do for cutscenes, but I'd storyboard gameplay. And then have like verbal description underneath it, I think, to sort of hash out my ideas. It's like, okay, here's what this looks like. Here's like the key story beats coming out of this. Here's how we might actually give that to the player to experience.
Yeah, I feel like if it were me, I would almost want to like make a series of like boards that like almost like drawn out literal like boards almost to sort of like signify the environment and show like enemy placements and stuff like that. Like kind of like those sort of like visual aids that like some really like cool, well-prepared dungeon masters will put together for D&D games. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, wicked cool.
Yeah. Like that's it in my mind, how I would imagine that would be a natural way for like me to approach that without like the next most natural way is like prototype it in a game, but that's a lot more work. So
yes, beyond the scope of this class, unfortunately.
Right. Beyond the scope of your free time as well, I would think.
Yes. Though I will be in my game projects class where I'm working with like a 12-person team. I will be attempting to add, a story into it through gameplay. So hopefully I'll actually have a place to apply it as I'm tinkering.
Cool. In that games projects class, I know previously you had talked about pitching game ideas to other people at your school. Is that what this is?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm on a team now, and it's got some very lovely people on it, and we'll be starting work together next semester.
Awesome. Do you know what the concept is yet?
No, we have no idea. We got together because we like each other.
Well, that's a really good reason, though.
Yeah. I think that's a better reason to get together. At least from what I have gleaned interviewing different teachers at DigiPen, the best games that have come out of DigiPen are always done by people who are good friends, all on the same team. So
that's cool.
That's good. I would say I'm good friends with any of them yet.
Real life too. Like,
yeah.
But
yeah, because there's just like a team cohesion, team communication with people that aren't as skilled versus a team of all-stars that don't like to talk to each other. I mean, it's just no comparison. The team with good communication is going to make a better game.
Right. If it's one of those things where people don't talk to each other, they'll just like work separately, often like overwrite each other's work, often like the game won't cohese together. Yeah. What's the verb of cohesion?
Cohere. There you go.
That's
look at
what
that.
It is.
Yeah, you said cohes. I was like, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not positive cohere is exactly the right, because like cohere becomes coherent,
right?
Versus cohesive is like another adjective. Whatever, cohere fits my purposes. Yeah, coheated. Having a coheated debate. the co-heated debate over game development teams.
That's right. Oh, good. Good stuff. This is actually why when the Korean teams entered the Overwatch League, I've got to nerd out a little bit here. This is why the American teams got trashed, is because the Korean teams had their communication was light years ahead of the American teams, and it showed.
Yeah. But excuse me, I'm a little offended. Did you just nerd out on a video game podcast?
What?
You know that's not allowed here.
Come on.
Only cool kids allowed.
That's right.
You better play football, nerd.
I'm so glad that we live in a time where it's like being a geek is cool.
Yeah.
Someday we'll be in the age where game developers are the new rock stars.
Yeah, I mean, I think to a certain extent we've gotten there in some cases, but
yeah, well, I mean, you've got your Corey Balrogs and your Kojimas and
yeah, and like your Miyamotos.
Hey, yep, yeah.
Peter Molyneux.
That's right. I forgot about him.
Yeah, he's quite an iconoclast.
Yeah, what is he doing now?
I don't know. Last I know is like there were a lot of sort of like upset people about Goddess. His game not meeting
game
their
recently?
Expectations. Oh. Yeah, it was like, do you remember that whole thing where he like, it was many years ago, where there was like a massive cube that you could like pick away at like one bit at a time and everybody was picking away at it at the same time, and like he hosted that?
What?
Oh, you never knew about this. I'm gonna find some way to like link stuff about it, but it was a whole thing. And he said like, at the center of it was a prize, and whoever like was the one who picked away the last bit of the cube would win that prize. And that prize ended up being like a role in his sort of like MMO game called Goddess, GODUS, as a god, like where like a lot of what you were doing would like determine stuff with the game. Like you literally also share in the profit of the game and stuff like that. I remember there being some controversy about like what he promised to the god not being fully granted. I don't know exactly how that happened. I don't know if there was maybe even a court case, but I also remember generally speaking, a lot of people were saying that like, yeah, Goddess isn't like nearly what he promised us, but also that's kind of what Peter Molyneux does. So that's what he's famous for.
That's funny. Yeah. We also got to throw Sid Meier into the pot.
Oh, does he as well?
No. Sid Meier makes great games. He's just another person that's like rock star in the game dev world.
That's fair. I think like Cliff Bleszinski, John Carmack.
Right. Oh, yep.
Yeah.
You have to go and hurry up and be the CEO or creative director of a company so that we can have more women faces.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's easier said than done.
Yeah, well, okay.
But, yeah, I'll do my best.
Oh, good.
Working on it. But, yeah, you know, I'll get to represent, like, a couple of minorities at once, like women and trans people. Look at that.
Hey, yeah, that's the way to do it.
I am a twofer.
A twofer.
Oh, boy.
You want to transition into dev thoughts?
I'm sorry, Milo, but I was gonna say joke there, but I think that is the joke.
Okay.
Transitioning, my favorite part.
that's my gender when I'm at DigiPen.
Dev thoughts?
What are your pronouns? Dev.
When you're like, what sounds like when you're at DigiPen, you're too exhausted to remember your gender. You're like, I am dev. I have never been anything else. I am solely dev.
I have morphed into this game.
Oh, boy.
That's funny.
Anyways, right. So Ben in and out dev thoughts and all that.
Yes.
But I said I was going to talk about my final project for animation and planning in games in this one. So I kind of gave like sort of a detailed dive into like what I was doing last time. So I'll just give a brief recap. We're making my team, the three of us are making procedurally generated guaranteed solvable, playable puzzle levels as our final project. And I'm not going to go into like how the generation happens, because that's all in the last episode. If you're interested, you can just go listen to episode 32 of TTGT. yeah. And, but yeah, in this last week was when most of the work on it happened. So basically from last Wednesday last week, so 8 days ago, until Sunday of that week, me and either one or two of my partners would meet up somewhere on campus and work for like the next 4 or 5 hours all together. And then we would all go home and do like a little bit of work on and off throughout the day remotely while chatting over Discord on it. And yeah, so kind of the, I guess I'll maybe talk about like a couple interesting things that like we ran into while making this. We kind of had some ambitions early on to like add a lot more like fancy schmancy stuff into the generation algorithm, like new rules for like how levels or like patterns of rooms would be generated, that we thought would like maybe make things more interesting in some ways. Like we had all these ideas of like, yeah, we should just sit down and figure out how to like add stuff in to make it the most interesting. And we kind of realized that like, well, if we want a polished game, let's maybe put in the polish right now for like making sure that it's playable and it all works and it supports, you know, the kind of like levels that we, our algorithm makes before we start like making additions to the algorithm to make that fancy. And so the entire rest of the dev was like taking up by like all the rest of that stuff instead of like actually making additions to the algorithm. But I think sure. What we ended up with was quite good. Yeah. Kind of one of the consequences we found of like our algorithm is that if we were just going to like line the rooms up like in the order we generated them with like doors connecting them like we had sort of imagined it, they would be really easy to solve. Like you would always just like get to one room that like will lead you toward the goal room, and the way toward the goal room is going to be like blocked off by like a locked door. And so you would just go to the other room to your left, you would travel past a couple rooms, hit a switch, and then travel back because it like forms a circle and wraps around back to the other room, and then the blocked off path wouldn't be blocked anymore. And you would just right. do that every time you ran into a blocked off path. So Whee! Like it's a fairly simplistic thing. Like it's not very hard or maybe that interesting to get to the end. And we also ran into some issues when we were kind of like laying everything out in the real world. Like, wait, okay, this might be difficult if we want to make sure that like, A, every room only has like up to four doors, like a north door, south door, east door, and west door connecting it to other rooms. And B, everything is laid out like in a real world way, like that could work. Like, for instance, if we have like sort of a group of rooms going off of one room where like one room in that group is connected to the original room and another room in that group is connected back to the original room so that it becomes like a big circle, then like both of those rooms have to be like fairly close. Like one could be on the south and one could be on the west, but we can't have like one be in the south, keep going south until it gets all the way down to the other room that would connect back to the original room and then connect it, because it's like, well, how am I going to connect it to that room if it's not next to it? But does that make sense?
Not particularly.
Okay. I'm sorry. I can't really think of an easier way to explain it without like showing pictures, because it's a super yeah. visual idea.
Yeah, but, yeah, yeah.
I'm real sorry, listeners. And I maybe if I'm feeling super ambitious, I'll put like a diagram image link yeah. in the show notes, but no promises.
Michaela's so just know, game.
Yeah. Just know that that became a problem. And so we were like, okay, how could we solve it? We could solve it if sort of like the ways that rooms were connected to each other had nothing to do with them being actually next to each other in physical space. We could solve it if the rooms were connected by teleporters.
Oh.
And we thought like, wait, This could be like a two birds with one stone issue, potentially. Like, we could solve the issue of like it being kind of a headache to figure out how to connect rooms in physical space. And we could also solve the issue that like the room layouts are kind of boring. Like, and like, it's easy to tell where to go next, because if you have to teleport into it, like, there's no obvious way to tell where you're going to teleport to. So it becomes quite difficult to tell where you're going next. Like a teleporter puzzle. Like, if you've ever played those in like Pokemon, or I think even some Shin Megami Tensei games have those, stuff like that. But so that's the direction we ended up going with, is we just threw teleporters into our rooms to make it. And so like we like scrounged together for 3D models, like adapted our algorithm to like place those 3D models in real world space, but you know, like as just like disconnected rooms with like teleporters that attach to each other. Mm-hmm. Found models for the teleporters, got like a nice model for our player character. We animated it because it was like a little floating robot, so we made him bob up and down and gave him like a little light on like his one like big blue like eye looking light bulb thing. Like, if you remember the robots from my motion planning project from the pathfinding thing on a few episodes ago, like it was those same robots, but we were like able to like actually like add lights on for like their eyes now, so that this guy has like a big blue light that like you can see it shining on walls around him. And we added like some nice particle effects to the teleporter so that they have that little like ring beam coming up from it that looks like a super sci-fi teleporter effect. We added like a pretty background that scrolls around when you move around the world. So like we were like, we even added like a menu that you can open up to like bring in all the options that like work into like the level generation algorithm, like number of rooms to generate total, like percent chance that any room is going to have a cycle of rooms like attached to it in a circle, stuff like that. And we just like let users be able to like boot it up, play with that, and then hit regenerate and then just make a new level. We even added in, this was mostly so that we could like demonstrate it in class easier, demonstrate how the algorithm works in class easier, but we added in a mode to like switch over like the real world rooms map to like a 2D map of how sort of like the grid of rooms connects to each other so that you can like visualize it. And we thought that seemed like, we were really proud of that. And like, even like the graders, when they graded us, they mentioned that was a really nice touch.
Cool.
Even added in like a big confetti effect that like pours in from the screen, because it's like a top-down camera view of like the entire level. So we had it so that like when you get to the goal room and like touch the ending flag, it says you win, and like a bunch of like confetti particles come down from the camera and like shower your character. So I don't know, I was pretty proud of how this turned out, especially for like, you know, a tiny like couple weeks school project. So
that is super cool. Did you build this in Unity?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so like sense. We part of the reason we wanted to build it in Unity was because we were thinking, if we want to add like a lot of like polish and like gamey stuff to this, Unity is going to make that way easier than like building it just on our own. So yeah, and we were like, as far as the class is concerned, he just wanted to make sure that like whatever core part of this that was like related to the animation and planning, we were going to build ourselves. And for us, that was like the level generation algorithm, since the idea is like, well, there's motion, there's path planning involved in this level, because we have to ensure that there is a possible route from the beginning of the level to the end of the level. So sort of like there's some sort of planned route built into the algorithm. And we built the algorithm completely by ourselves without using any Unity built in anything. But
nice.
And for the rest of it, you know, we were aided by Unity.
Yes. Yeah. Like, yeah.
For instance, with the particles, like our first assignment in this class was to build our own particle system, like way back in like January, February.
Right.
And I was just struck by like, oh my God, this gives me such a new appreciation for Unity's built-in particle system. It has so many options, and I don't have to code any of it myself. It's so easy.
And like, then you go, of course, triple.
I'm really sorry. I just wanted to interject something cool. But like for my particle system assignment, like back at the beginning of this class, one of the simulations I showed for particles was like this big sort of like magic spell almost of like a bunch of confetti particles like spinning and going off into the distance as they like change colors and fade to white. And like I did a very similar effect with like the confetti like pouring down from the camera on this game. And I'm like, in Unity, I can do this in 10 minutes. When I built it myself, it took like 10 hours. Just such a stark difference. Gives me a whole new appreciation for Unity.
And of course, I have to think about AAA games that are using Frostbite Engine or that are using Source Engine or that are using, what's another big one? Snowdrop or
Unreal.
Many. Yeah, Unreal, right? And it's just like, man, someone had to build all these features.
Yeah, like somebody had to build like the engine, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And some people like doing that. That's what surprises me. Like, I don't want to make I don't want to make tools. I want to make games. But
yeah.
Some people are different. Some people are a different breed.
But, next semester with the game team I'm working on, we're running on a completely custom engine. So they'll be... the programmers will be making the engine. It's a requirement for all second year Digipen students.
Okay. I was about to say that sounds like a terrible idea and it's going to cost you guys a lot of time, but like if it's required, all right. Yes. I mean, good luck, but
yep. Yep. And they've already had a little bit of practice. All the programmers have.
That's right? Good.
And it's kind of cool because they'll build the engine while all of the designers and artists are prototyping in Unity. And then we'll just go and port over all the design into the custom engine once they've got everything up and running.
That does sound like it could go bad. So that's going to take a lot of careful communication.
Yep. As we were talking about with communication right. is not everything, but a huge chunk of things.
Yeah, that sounds especially important in this kind of scenario with like a large team on a relatively short time scale with a lot of custom stuff.
Yep. Yep, so, it'll be exciting to see how it goes. Most of these go down in flames, and by that I mean they're just okay.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
It's terrible. My game is decent.
Yeah.
It can't be seen in public.
Yeah. I'd like to make something very, very good. I tend to like making very, very good things, but...
Yeah, don't we all?
We'll see. It's going to be quite the interesting challenge to work with a 12-person team and then... later in my career, you know, like 300 person team, perhaps. You never know.
Right. The logistics of that is ridiculous, which is, absolutely. You know, often they struggle with that heavily, as I feel like we see more and more. But
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I have a lot of sympathy for that.
Yeah. Oh, boy. As for my own dev thoughts, I've just been working on my portfolio a little bit. And it's really not even me. We do like a Discord chat with my mom, and then she takes over my screen and she does things for me so I don't have to tire out my hands. So I'm just building a portfolio. That's all I'm working on. I'm taking the summer off from development.
It's valid. Do you, at some point when it's finished, you're going to like let all of us see it, right?
Yes. We can.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. We'll do a PowerPoint presentation for the next episode when it's done.
The next episode will be a PowerPoint presentation. Yeah. You better show up at our whatever central location we can both get to.
Yeah.
That'll be like to get like the both of us to somewhere. Where will that be? Like, I don't know, Montana?
Right. Oh man, we just need to take that teleporter out of your game and put it into real life. That'll be easy.
Ah, shoot. You know what? I didn't think of that. My project would have been so much better if I just made a real life teleporter. I mean, right? Amateur.
That really would have impressed the graders.
Exactly. They only gave me a 97. I was like, I know I say only, but like, this is one of those classes where in most of the assignments, like, there's like a list of things you can do that are all worth a certain point. And so like, I will like do things that'll get me 100 points or more. And then I get 100 points or more. And so like, I'm used to getting like perfect scores on everything in this class. But like I got a 97 on this, and like the grader had several nice things to say about it and was like completely like unreserved in like his compliments, I felt like. And then I got a 97. I'm like, well, where did those 3 points go? What did we not do well? I'm like, come on.
Telling you, real life teleporter would have got those 3 points.
Yeah, you know what? Shoot. I'm really not on my game. Ironic, honestly.
Funny. Shall we move to the next one?
Yeah, what's it called again?
Better than now.
Gamer thoughts.
/ nerdy thoughts.
So normally in our little podcast chat, Milo will type up our kind of agenda so that we have some kind of memory of what we need to talk about. And instead of gamer thoughts here, he wrote nerdy tots. What a so name.
Welcome. Yeah, welcome to our new section. I guess I'll kick this one off. Since,
yeah, go ahead.
I didn't really have much to say in the previous one. So I haven't watched any anime in the past week and a half. Big surprise.
What?
I know. and I haven't played any games either. But I have been watching a lot of pro Overwatch and like professional Overwatch coaches breaking down pro Overwatch gameplay. And it just gave me a whole new appreciation for the design that went into that game. It's monumentally good. It's so, so excellently well executed. Specifically, I was looking at how they built their maps and how that then contributes to the ability for counterplay. And so counterplay is essentially the crux of competitive gaming. Counterplay is the ability to take an action based on what you think your opponent is going to do in the hopes that they'll take that action and you'll then have outwitted them, which allows you to create an experience whereby you can say, ha, I beat you. and you did. You outsmarted your opponent or you outreacted your opponent. And so that can look like a lot of different things across a lot of different games. So for instance, Hearthstone, there's all sorts of different deck builds and combinations. And so the more you play that game, the more you have an understanding of that, the more you're able to, like, you'll see your opponent get down 3 cards. You'll be like, oh, they're going for this setup. Well, my deck can do this. So what if I play this and interrupt their build setup that way? And then lo and behold, they go for it and you've just destroyed their plans. So it's adding these little ways in your designs that contribute to that competitive feeling. And Overwatch is, I mean, like all the mechanics and what have you, they of course do this. I'll talk about cooldowns in a second and why that's so cool. Hey, cool. But their map design contributes to it. And that just blew me away. And I guess that makes sense. I mean, it's a competitive multiplayer first-person shooter. It's kind of an important element. But the maps are set up in such a way where you've got a series of choke points and different like high ground areas. And what the high ground areas allow for is for people to position on top of the high ground areas. And when, obviously, when you're on top of a high ground area, you have a better view and you've got a better angle on your opponent. What you can also do is sort of like back off of the ledge, which makes you a smaller target, but you still have this wide vision, this wide field of view. You can see more, you can hit more, which is just a huge advantage. But two, which this is something I'd never thought of, but made me understand counterplay a lot more, is it contributes immensely to map control. So in a competitive shooter or any competitive game that has maps, map control essentially is the amount of area in which you have the most influence over. And by influence, I'm just using this as a vague term. Influence could be like, I have 6 guys in this square and you have 1. I have map control, right? but what the high ground does is it gives you these huge, large swaths of map control. So if you're in the corner and the corner has high ground and then the rest of the map is beneath you and flat, you suddenly have massive map control over that entire area because you can see it. If you're a mobile character, you can get to any of it. And what this means is that your opponent they have to take that into account. Like, say there's some objective in the middle of the map and you're off to the side, but you've got high ground control and you control the objective. It's like a king of the hill type of a thing, and you've caught the objective, so you're not getting points. This is an actual thing in Overwatch. Your opponent can, of course, go get it because you're not on the point, but you can interrupt them at any step in their movement towards that objective. So it just creates this massive opportunity for counterplay and setting up these advantageous positions where you can just destroy your opponent, which then creates that experience that you can't get in other games that aren't against other human players, right? You get that competitive thrill of outsmarting someone, of outplaying someone, that thing that just requires another person to in order to do that. And they've set up these positions so beautifully in just these really brilliant ways that make for interesting decision making in which characters you want to run in the game, who you're going to have on the high ground, how long you stay on the high ground. If you're the opposing team, like, do you contest the high ground? That's going to cost resources, and you only have limited resources. So if I go up to fight on the high ground, to get up to the high ground, I have to use cooldowns. So I'm going to talk about cooldowns and why they're so cool now. I had to go watch a bunch of really high-level Overwatch play to see how brilliant cooldowns are. And Overwatch isn't the only game that uses this, but... So you use some cooldowns to get up there. Maybe you've got like some crazy superpower jump, or you've got a jetpack or whatever. You've got something that lets you get up to the high ground. But now your opponent, who was already on the high ground because they knew you were going to try and come through this area, has not used any of their cooldowns, which means that they have more resources to take you on, which makes them even harder to get off the high ground. So it's this really cool level design that really awards people who understand how map control works and supporting that in such a way, the design supports that in such a way where you've got places that you can set up and do that. Now with cooldowns are super cool because a cooldown in Overwatch is essentially, it's an ability that you can use and then you use it and it grants you the ability. And then you have to wait some amount of time between 1 second and I don't know what the longest one is, probably 30 seconds for a res. To revive someone. And once you use it, you of course wait this amount of time and then it comes back up again. Now, I just played the game like a newbie for a long, long time, but watching competitive players, one of the things I noticed through watching them and through hearing people talk about them is that they're keeping tabs on which characters that their opponents are using when they use their cooldowns. Because what that means is that the opponent team has less resources. So if they have less resources and you have more resources, you can afford to go for like a full frontal attack, or you can find someone who just used an ability that gets them out of danger if they're a little bit exposed, knowing that they can no longer defend themselves, and collapse on them and destroy them. And it's just, it's an amazing feat of teamwork and of design that allows for that teamwork to happen, so much so that there's gigantic tournaments of video games. It's just incredible design work and the balancing that goes into that for 30 some different characters that play in completely different styles. It's just insane.
Yeah, like to me, like the most monumental thing here is like the balancing across so many different characters. Especially given that like Overwatch is a much more balanced thing than like Super Smash Brothers, which has more characters, but really interesting. That sounds like having to keep, especially the thing about like knowing which of your enemies had used their cooldowns. That sounds like a lot to keep in your head, but also the sort of thing that would definitely like separate high level play from lower level play.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course they've just practiced this for hours, so it started off as a very conscious thing, thinking about it, and has eventually just become ingrained. And so they just notice and react to it now. But yeah, it's crazy cool. Just thinking about the design side of that and what that allows for is just, yeah, super cool.
Yeah, no, that is super cool. Yeah, wow. I'm so, sorry if I don't have that much to say about it. I was really trying to listen, but like I think I said before, I might have said it off the podcast, but I'm tired right now, and it's, I was trying so hard to listen, but I was like zoning, like, whoa.
no one will fault you. Plus, I just love geeking out over the tiniest things in Overwatch.
Oh yeah. I mean, noted, but it's totally fine.
Yeah.
When I'm not talking right now, I just kind of go, and just like, yeah. Stare off into oblivion.
The void.
Yeah. So comforting, yet so cold.
So I didn't play any games, but I did watch plenty. That's what I got.
Yeah, that is cool. But, you know, you got to get your Overwatch fixed one way or another.
That's right.
Whether or not your hands are feeling too selfish to help, but yeah. It's not very handy of them.
Hey, you made a pun. Now we've both made puns this podcast.
Dang.
Look at us go.
Our viewership decreases by one, thereby 50%.
Yeah, every pun.
Yeah. Welcome to A Tale of Two Game Devs, the podcast that nobody listens to, and so we can say whatever we want. Did you know that a banana is best served on a pizza? That's right.
Yes.
I don't think I actually secrets. Believe that. I'd like to try it, though.
Secrets from the void.
Sometimes when you stare into the void stares back, and the void says, banana pizza.
You say, yummy.
But like, actually though, like fried bananas is like a pizza topping. I could see that working out.
Man, I don't know about fried bananas, but I could certainly see plantains.
What is the difference?
Plantains aren't very sweet.
Is it that they They're don't more... have like much carbs in them? Is that it, Milo? Is that what this is about?
No. I just, it's like, okay. I could see potatoes on pizza. I don't know. The idea of putting bananas on pizza kind of freaks me out.
Really? I feel fried though, like plantains especially. I think plantains would be like even better because I feel like bananas aren't the sweetest fruit. So like.
Man, what bananas have you eaten?
I don't know. Like, I feel like I don't need to justify my bananas to you. I didn't even have a good response. I was just flustered. Like, excuse me.
Just let me put my bananas on my pizza.
Just let me do it. Plantains would probably work better, though, as I agreed with. I think you're right on that. But
that's got to be the episode title. Bananas on pizza.
Oh god, we gotta do it now. but we're making them wait for it, right? They have to get to the 1 hour 17 minute mark to like see us completely lose it about this.
The description is just, want to find out why the episode is titled this? Watch to find out.
Well, I mean, if they watch, not much is going to happen. They should listen instead, TBH.
Yeah, well, we'll be doing that PowerPoint episode. So.
Oh my god. From now on, our episodes will be delivered via PowerPoint, which is one single blank slide with an audio clip of the entire podcast in the background.
We'll call it The Void.
Oh my god. That would be like, that would be a bold gimmick for us to introduce at this point in the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, A Tale of Two Game Devs has officially gone off the rails. We apologize.
Oh, jeez. I feel like I need to breathe after all this. Not like that.
Like Darth Vader?
Like a normal human being that doesn't exist in the Star Wars cinematic universe.
Fine.
Okay. So as for my gamer thoughts.
Yes.
What have I played since milestone. The last time? Yeah. Miles and his stones. He sure likes them. but the rocks are great. So
you also just inadvertently made another pun, because for those who don't know, my legal name is Miles.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Miles.
So we just
Milo.
Lost another viewer. Thanks.
Yeah. I'm sorry. This is totally my fault. We're going to get negative viewers soon. Do we get like negative ad revenue if we have negative users? Oh, no. They like start taking money away from us. They start charging us for existing.
We noticed that you have the most unpopular podcast in the entire history of the internet. And so we're going to charge you for taking up valuable real estate.
God, you were taking up space in a data center somewhere that could instead occupy valuable medical research. Instead, you know what it occupies? Bananas on pizza. I hope you feel good about yourself.
And even if it weren't for something as humanitarian as medical research, we could at least put more cats on the internet.
Exactly.
Get your act together.
Maybe we could have at least made money off of it, but we're losing money off of you.
Oh, good stuff. So about those games.
Yeah. I think maybe the one game I'll talk about is the most notable game I've played recently, because I haven't played like a ton of games recently. I know I told you, like, Milo, over text that I'd probably be playing games and packing recently, but I haven't started packing yet. And I also haven't been playing games because I've been meeting up with a bunch of friends, like, somewhat unplanned. But that's taken up a lot of time. So I played recently the demo for the game Just Shapes and Beats. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah. That was actually a partial influence on Zero.
Really? Oh, I could totally see that. I super loved it. Like, I loved it so much that I bought the game. But so Just Shapes and Beats is like, I would call it like a bullet hell rhythm game. Would you say that's accurate?
Yep.
Yeah, that seems about right. So it's a bullet hell rhythm game. So that's the beats part of it. And it's got the shapes part, because like all of the art is like made through like standard geometrical shapes, but like it's animated in such a way that it's really aesthetically pleasing to see. Mm-hmm. And like the colors just work really well. And so like as a bullet hell, you spend like most of the game going through different levels where you're like a little square, I think, dodging all sorts of like geometrical like bullets or like laser beams or other kinds of like obstacles. And they're all kind of like tuned in time with the music in the background. So which is like this heavy electronic music. And I feel like this game gets you into the zone faster than like almost any other video game I've played. I super love that about it. Like, it just immediately like feels like you're in the middle of it, right? With this awesome music and like this challenging level. And like, to me, it feels like, at least in the demo, the first few levels I played, it was really good at being like just hard enough to keep you always paying attention. And like the music really helps sort of like keeping your focus like glued to it. I don't know. I just super loved it. And so I bought the whole game. I want to hopefully over this next week when I'm spending some time in Illinois with my Switch and also with some family, actually get some time to like play more of the game. But yeah, I don't know. That's about all I want to talk about for gamer thoughts. It's really fun. So you said you've played the game before though, right?
I watched the game. A friend of mine, a design friend, was using it as inspiration for his game, and he was showing me sort of how it worked. I was like, oh, that's really cool. That's really, really flashy what they're capable of doing with such simple shapes.
Right.
At the time, we were working on games that weren't allowed to have any art whatsoever, and so it was a good thing to pull from. There was one thing in particular that I was designing that I pulled very strongly. It had nothing to do with the core gameplay, but it was like some visual effect that I borrowed in Zero, and I don't remember what it was.
I don't either.
Hmm. Yeah. But cool stuff.
Yeah, really, I don't know. Cool Zero stuff. Ended up really good. I enjoyed it. And like personally, I think part of the reason I like this sort of like incredibly like low detail art style where it's just like bold shapes and that's it. It's like I am somebody with next to zero artistic ability. And I'm like, wait, I could make this art, you know? Yeah. And so I'm like, this is inspiring. I could make a game like this.
Yeah.
So that seems like really cool to me. That's like part of the appeal, I think.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and you've got the programming down.
Yeah. And like, I really think it just comes down to the animation, sort of like in the way that the shapes move is where a lot of the sort of like pleasing aesthetic value comes from for this game.
Yeah, they nailed their principles of animation.
Yeah, they really did that well. But yeah, that's my gamer thoughts.
Nice.
As I've heard they say on JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, nice, very nice, Caesar-chan.
That's right.
Anyway, shall we talk about the community?
Yeah, let's talk.
All right. So, community, hello, all -2 of you. If you've got any feedback for us, questions, any games you'd like us to play, if you'd just like to have a chat, whatever, you can hit us up at our email, which is atale2gamedevs@gmail.com. It has no special characters, no spaces, no underscores, no nothing. Just one word, all lowercase. That's atale2gamedevs@gmail.com. We would love to talk about your email on the show and also name you just so we can have a person to talk about attached to this email. But if you'd like to remain anonymous, you can certainly do that. And if you wouldn't like to talk about it on the show, that's fine too. Just make sure you specify either one of those things or both in the email itself so that we know how you would like it to be handled. Also, you can follow us on Twitter, which is @2gamedevs. Normally, I've been posting when we release a new episode, but I've been bad about that recently. I need to fix that.
Sorry, I've been bad about posting the episodes.
Oh, no. Did you post the last episode before this one? Milo, you naughty child. But shoot, you guys might get a twofer, but oh well. On Twitter, our handle is @2gamedevs. I usually post about new episode releases. On the day on which Milo's hands have recovered enough to be taken home by those country roads, we'll post about streaming, and for any future streaming plans that we may enact, we'll post about it on there. So, yeah, is that everything we got?
That's what we got.
All right. Well, what we got ain't a lot, but it's what we got. This has been A Tale of Two Game Devs, a podcast about two friends who aren't video game industry veterans.
And are being sucked slowly into the void of banana pizza.
Wow. Catch you next time.